talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. It's another week, in fact, Monday, the 16th of February, 2026. I do hope you had a lovely weekend. Of course, it was Valentine's weekend, and hopefully there's a big uplift for all the bars and restaurants out there providing services for couples, etc. But anyway, maybe you didn't, and you had a lovely, relaxing night in front of the TV on Saturday night. It's funny, too, watching TV. I was thinking there during the weekend that we've kind of made cinemas like front rooms, and we've made front rooms like cinemas. So, you know, your TV at home often, you have a soundbar or surround sound, a big screen, and set it up like a cinema. And you go into the cinema and you're having pizzas and burgers and all manner of things. But anyway, that is the way it is. Let me remind you of how you get in touch with us here on the programme. We like your WhatsApps and your texts, of course, to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. Feel free to give us a call either on 074 91 25000. Our researcher and producer, Caroline, or assisted by Shannon, are waiting. They are waiting for you. And also email comments at highlandradio.com. Let's have a look at what's making the front of and inside some of the papers today. The Derry People, Donegal News. More probation officers are being sought in Donegal to meet the rising demand of the service. Letterkenny District Court has been told of the pressures facing the probation service, who are inundated with referrals from the court. A probation report can be ordered by a judge for a defendant who comes before the court on a criminal offence and who has either pleaded guilty or is found not guilty before handing down their sentence. The probation service protects the public and creates safer communities by helping offenders to desist from committing more crime. On to the Derry News this morning. Attacks on Altnagelvin Hospital staff unchanged despite body camera trial. We talked about this body camera trial with the hope being that it would deter people from verbally or indeed physically abusing staff in the hospital. It hasn't had the desired effect by the reads of things. A trial of body-worn cameras out in the Galvin Hospital's Accident and Emergency Department did not reduce the number of assaults on staff, new figures revealed. Figures released under a Freedom of Information request show the trial failed to lessen attacks on A&E staff from November 2025 to until January 2026. 36 body-worn cameras were issued as part of a new safety trial to protect staff from continued instances of violence. 142 nursing staff, including all bands of nursing and healthcare assistants, had access to the cameras. And during the three-month trial, which saw 18,826 attendances at the ED, 9 physical and verbal assaults on staff were recorded. Now, I would not have thought that the actual presence of these cameras was a proof of them working or not, to be honest with you. This is documented evidence now that can be used to prosecute people potentially for the assault of staff. That presumably is not in the courts now. So I would believe that this would have to go through the court system with convictions where appropriate, sentencing where appropriate. And it's then that you would start seeing perhaps whether or not these cameras were useful in preventing attacks on staff. I personally, if someone is going to do that, I don't think the camera being present in and of itself is going to stop them. So the proof of the pudding for me would be in the months ahead when people start appearing in court and are named and shamed and perhaps even video being made available of them assaulting the staff. And that's when I believe, not that I'm an expert in anything, let alone that. That's when I believe the evidence of whether they're effective or not will come to pass. If you're involved in that or work in the hospital and you have a view on whether or not they work or whether you expect them to work once the judicial process is completed, please do let me know. The Irish Times: senior figures in government have suggested it is likely that the Republic of Ireland soccer team's home fixture against Israel, scheduled for October 4th, will be played at a neutral venue outside the country, which is something I proposed on Friday as a solution to it. It's not a solution to those that don't want Ireland playing Israel, but it's a solution to the political stroke policing issues to some extent. The government's position is that the game is a matter for the FAI, though both the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Taoiseach Simon Harris said over the weekend that they believed the fixture should go ahead. So, I mean, obviously that is the two top guys in government, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris. They both believe the game should go ahead. Do you think they are reflective of what the public want, or are they out of touch with what the public want? You know, obviously we're going to hear, because perhaps more inclined to contact a radio station, we're going to hear very passionate voices as to why it shouldn't go ahead. Do you think the majority of people out there say, of course it should? Or do you think the majority believe the game shouldn't go ahead? However, two people with knowledge of the issue who spoke on condition of anonymity said they expected that the game would go ahead at a neutral venue, though each stressed that no decision has been made. And lots of you texted in this on Friday and over the weekend. This caller believes supporters should boycott the game. Morning, Greg. The elephant in the room for me in regards to Israel is, why are they allowed to compete in European competitions? They aren't in Europe, but some states or countries do play in continental competitions, if I could put it to you like that. So it's not unusual. It's not unprecedented. Tell Jack Murray, who was on with you on Friday, this has nothing to do with Ireland. He and the others like him should worry about our own country. What's Jack Murray's view on the innocent people being killed in Iran by that regime? What about the other countries in our group? Are they so concerned? Well, at least one of them are. And I did put that to him. But the sort of argument is that, you know, you only have control of what you have control of in the moment. What do you think about this? Vaping and smoking are going to become part of the pledge. I'm not sure how common the pledge is nowadays or how religiously it's stuck to, but maybe it sends out a good message. Maybe it starts an important conversation. Catholic school children planning their confirmation now have the option to give a solemn pledge not to inhale vapes or smoke cigarettes. It comes as record numbers of teenagers now vape, which many believe leads to cigarettes and cannabis use and onto harder drugs. Almost a quarter of Irish adults, 23% between 18 and 34, now vape. Figures released by the CSO last year show. Taoiseach Micheál Martin recently condemned widespread vaping as the revenge of the tobacco industry and indicated the government will look at banning vapes in cars with children on board. The previous confirmation pledge extended to not drinking, but yesterday Bishop Michael Reuter of the Armagh Diocese said, I warmly welcome the rewording of the confirmation pledge to explicitly include vaping and cigarette smoking alongside alcohol and illicit drugs. Have you a view on it? Maybe it's not even something worthy of a view, and I don't mean that bad, but maybe it's just not something that moves you. I can't imagine anyone's going to message in and saying that shouldn't be part of the pledge, but our phone lines are open and we love all messages. Yeah, so following on from that story that I referenced with Lee Gooch there, or he referenced with me in The Independent, for decades Americans have wondered about the existence of aliens in the mysterious desert holding facility Area 51, and now Barack Obama, after two terms as president, has finally given an answer. They are real, but I haven't seen them, and they're not being kept in. What is it? Mr. Obama said, speaking during the No Lie podcast with Brian Tyler Cohen. But the thing that's frustrated me about this, and I'm not that big into aliens, you had a two-time US president saying aliens are real, but there was no follow-up question saying, how do we know they're real? Have we had any interaction with them? And so on and so forth. So to some extent, it kind of makes the whole situation even more mysterious. The Irish Daily Star tells us that nearly 20,000 vehicles were seized for having no insurance last year. Now, it was always argued to us that the reason our premiums were so high was the amount of uninsured vehicles on the road. That was a contributing factor. So I very confidently predict that insurance premiums now will start to tumble because nearly 20,000 vehicles were seized for having no insurance last year. I wish I was being honest in saying that, but I think we all know, that insurance prices are going to continue to rise. That the fact that we're taking 20,000 uninsured vehicles off the road in a year, it's not going to benefit us in one way, shape or other. A report published by the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland revealed a total of 19,673 cars were taken off the road in 25. Officers can now detect if a motorist has insurance after a database was established, which can be accessed through automatic number plate recognition technology on the phone. So listen, people shouldn't be on the road if they're driving illegally, but I don't think it's going to positively impact on our insurance premiums. Lastly, Micheál Martin presented US President Donald Trump with a custom golf tee and marker costing €735 during his St. Patrick's Day trip to Washington last year. The luxury item, which came in a personalised wooden box, was one of 140 gifts worth €5,709 given out by the Taoiseach during 2025, internal records have revealed. They include a biography of Charlie Haughey, presented to former US Senator George Mitchell last April, and 30 scented candles gifted to EU leaders, costing €934 in a visit to Brussels before Christmas. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky received a bottle of green spot whiskey from Mr. Martin during a meeting at Shannon Airport in February, along with a merino scarf worth €37.80. So he didn't splash the cash too much on Zelensky. But President Donald Trump got a tee and marker worth not far off €1,000. On Friday, we were talking about littering and waste on our roads. A few of you messaged in. Many of you did, of course. We were talking about dog littering as well. A caller says, there's a sign up on Swan Park for many years refining on dog fouling. Never heard of one person being fined. Well, there hasn't been a person fined in the last 4 years. Morning, have these dog wardens in plain clothes and have a few wee cameras on trees, etc., in hot spots, or a text number for people to send on pics, etc., if they witness anything. I see it on a daily basis in Bunkrana. It's disgraceful, and they just walk on. You see, that's it. You or I perhaps would confidently say we could catch someone not picking up after their dog, but it seems to be beyond the powers that be. Hi, Greg. Why not provide dog wardens with video cameras? They could sit in a hotspot videoing dogs and owners all day. Another, loose dogs not kept on a leash on beaches also causes a lot of harm to seabirds. Dog chasing seabirds destroy nesting sites and force birds to abandon traditional feeding grounds. Many are endangered birds like the curlew. Listening now, people who've bought tickets, they've had their name down for weeks and don't know what matches they will see. So boycott is not an option. Just saying, that's in relation to the Israel situation, I presume. Hi, could you put forward a question for the Greg Hughes Show, please? Greg, could you ask your listeners or find out more information about stock incoming of baby formula SMA, first infant milk to shops? Have searched everywhere, Letterkenny, Inishowen, and none be got. Stocks of other formulas getting low too. Are shops getting more in? Any information on how long this is likely to go on for from the companies? Any input at all from government level, as this is a necessary baby food? Thanks in advance. Now, we have a telephone number. You can call SMA directly between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, 0800. No, that's in the north, sorry. I'll read it anyway. 0800 081 8180 or The Republic 1800 931 832. But what is going on? Is there a shortage? I hadn't heard. I know there had been some recalls, but nothing, as far as I can recall, in relation to SMA. But I can imagine, I would know the anxiety of potentially running out of this food if this is what you're giving your baby. So anyone in the industry or in retail knows why there seems to be a slow up in supply of various baby formulas, let us know, please, to 086 60 25,000. A lot of you messaging in relation to bus services. It follows on from a conversation we had about a bus service or calls for a bus service from sort of Downings, Carrigart, onto Milford and into Letterkenny. There is a very good bus service there, but unfortunately the operators say commercially we can't run it past 3 o'clock, but we would love to do so if we could get some government support. And then we were talking to another company servicing sort of Dunfanaghy and that type of area who are in the same boat. This listener says, I just wanted to say I live in Milford and have two grown-up children. My son, a past student in the ATU. I also keep foreign students occasionally. The lack of a bus service is a disgrace. If my son was finished at 1:30 in college, he would have to wait until 6 for the bus home in the evening. Always trying to rely on myself and family and friends for lifts in the evening too, just for simple things like going to the cinema or a bite to eat. It's really frustrating knowing that there is a service there ready to go, but not being prioritised. It would benefit so many. Another, would it make sense to have Gallagher's serve Downings, Carrigart, Milford, then travel to Kilmacrennan as a local link bus service and end up by Mountain Top and local link 973 can serve the Fannad, Kerry, Kilrath, Mullan, Remelton area and no overlap, and have Mangan doing similar, as local link does not go through Falkara, Dunfanaghy and Creasla, though it's a good point made, but they've auto-corrected in the text to Funfanaghy. So I would say what's happening is, if they're organising a night out, they might say, we're heading to Funfanaghy. But they've been messaging me and it's auto-corrected, which is fun, but it's a really good point, thanks. Good morning, I'm wondering if there's a bus from Buncrana to Letterkenny earlier than 20 past 8. It's simply too late for work or college, thanks. I don't know the ins and outs of the bus service, I'll chuck it out there. Someone obviously looking to get into Letterkenny a bit earlier, but they say the earliest bus from Buncrana to Letterkenny is 20 past 8. Good morning, Greg. Gallagher's bus from Milford is great. My only gripe is the price and that you have to buy single tickets. They don't do return tickets. Could you ask them about another taxi service in Milford? Milford has a taxi service that stops at 10 p.m. so people can't go out and have a drink and socialise in Milford. The taxi man is home. Right, well, there you go. But of course, these are private operators and it's up to them when they run or don't run. Ask Councillor Declan Meehan, does the 973 bus go to Letterkenny Hospital where people have appointments? And on it goes. Thank you for all of those messages. There are topics that really caught your ear on Friday and we didn't want to just sort of leave them to one side since you took the time to text in. Now, as you may or may not know, we have a podcast that runs alongside this show. It's a sister podcast, the Greg Hughes Podcast. We have new episodes released every Friday at 11 a.m. We've 6 episodes up at the moment and there's a couple of bonus episodes up there as well. And last week, or on Friday, it's a really interesting conversation with a Strabane woman, Bernadette. And she talks to me about the difficulty of having a child who is a drug addict, and enabling and doing the right thing and planning funerals whilst they're alive and feeling helpless and struggle, the struggles of trying to get support when support is being sought and so on and so forth. It's a story with a happy ending, of course, but that podcast available on our website, highlandradio.com. It's also on Spotify and it populates amongst this show as well. So if you subscribe on Spotify, you'll get the weekly podcasts as well. And very shortly, it's going to be available for you on iTunes. I thought it was on iTunes, but there was a slight delay in getting it up for you Apple users. But this emailer says, I was listening to that lady in relation to her daughter and how drugs have had a huge impact in their lives. My family was in the same situation. I'm not sure if the previous lady's daughter has any kids. My situation was much the same. I tried everything to help my family member. I was slowly watching my family member fade away, slowly dying in front of my eyes. We had grandkids in the middle of all of the nightmare. We tried to protect them as much as possible. I felt the same. The more I tried to protect everyone, the more I felt I was enabling them to continue. And I took the hardest decision of my life to involve Tusla. We had to try and look after 4 grandkids, myself, another grandmother and an aunt. Of the kids shared the responsibility of the 3 of them. The other, who was only a baby, I was asked and begged by individuals within our family to take care of the baby, as did my family member who was using drugs, which meant I would be leaving my job. I thought very seriously about doing this, but at the last minute, I decided no. To do this and take on this responsibility, I felt selfish putting a grandchild into care, but I had to look at the bigger picture. I feel to do this would only enable my family member to continue with drugs. If they didn't fight for their own kids, then nothing would work. Taking this step to keep everyone safe, I was told that I was a terrible and unfit mother and grandmother by others whom I would now call not in-laws, but outlaws, who I have to say don't have anything to do with anymore. We secured help for my family member and attended counselling them as the addict and all of us as a family. It was hard to sit in front of strangers and be open about everything. The hardest decision I have ever had to make and would do it all again if I had to. To now watch my child and grandchildren all together again as a happy, healthy little family, I'm so proud of my child and the person they have become. And be proud of yourself as well, because you had to make a tough decision. And that's much of what that podcast is about. Sometimes we can love people too much, or maybe, you know, we don't understand that love comes in different ways, but clearly you love your grandchildren, your child so very much, and you did the right thing. And I'm so pleased that you're able to watch on in a happier space than you were previously. Don't forget, if you want to watch today's show, you can watch it and every day on our Facebook page, highlandradio.com, Highland Radio News and Sport, sorry. Or if you want to watch it on your big TV, your smart TV, your Fire Stick, we're on the YouTube app, just search Highland Radio Ireland. And you can watch it at home as you might any TV show in inverted commas. And we say good morning to Pat McCarthy. Pat, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You want to talk about the Letterkenny Town Bus. What are your concerns? What's the issues?
Well, first of all, Letterkenny Town Bus, the drivers are excellent, and which is fantastic. And, Craig, the problem is that I use it very frequently. And on last week I was told the town bus is no more, and which completely annoyed me. So what it meant that I have to go and look for alternative transport. What's left me with what's left me is that it's annoying me that that it's all of a sudden stopped, and I don't know where how that happened or where it happened from.
Give us an idea, Pat, so we fully understand. Like, how did you use it, and what difference did it make to you, just in terms of independence and getting around?
Yeah, independence was the key. That it's great. You know, the independence was the fact, Greg. You're still with me, yeah?
Yes. Take your time. Don't panic.
No, somebody's trying to get through to me. Ironic. Nobody ever calls me.
I know what you mean.
In terms of independence, Greg, rather than me having to rely on others, and they're great, I want to be independent myself. So it means that bus, which is regular, and it does work on time, and there is signs for buses around town, as in when times that it would be at. So, for instance, this morning, I know the exact time that the bus will be here at, and given the transport or given the cars, it might be slower, but that's life.
Yeah.
But it's to do with independence, Greg. That's the key. I'm disabled myself. I've got MS and epilepsy. The drivers understand that, and they know that sometimes I may need assistance just coming down the steps, and other times I don't. But no, the other thing, Greg, is that with the other people who I've met on the bus would have been probably annoyed as well, and that's where I'm at, and I don't know who's the best person to contact. In terms of is it the council or is it DFI or the transport authority?
See, the problem is, Pat, at this point now, we were supposed to have a new town bus service.
Correct.
But it was deferred. I think that was supposed to kick in last November, and it was deferred for a year. And a councillor was on this show talking about it, and they were of the view that at least a year. I think I might be quoting them correctly there. So now there's this gap. So really, for you to get out of the house, is it taxis or looking for favours? I mean, effectively, unless you want to ask other people or pay quite a considerable amount of money, you're housebound. I don't want to be dramatic, but...
But you're correct, Greg. And it's funny when you mentioned that the ambition to put on a new state-of-the-art transport and bus transport. And because I was looking at some nice glossy brochures, and glossy brochures don't drive. But it's the whole thing about the independence and the freedom to choose. That's where I'm stuck at. What I'd really like to do is to have it done today, not in 6 months' time. Yeah. So what possibly could happen is somebody will chat to somebody else and somebody else, you know, in terms of at that level, and that. They possibly don't know that how it impacts us who use the bus.
You see, this is going to be, people might not like me saying this, but here we go. We are spending millions of Euro around Letterkenny at the moment, installing cycle lanes. So for active travel, these cycle lanes actually, and some of these changes to the roads, unless the plans have changed, which I don't think they are, don't even have accommodation for this new bus service that's coming. It seems to me, again, a little example of the cart before the horse. Surely we should have a fully functioning town bus service for people like you, and to get people around and get people out of their cars. But instead, we've got no town bus service at all. We've got no date when one might come. Yet that the whole area is being ground to a halt by putting in cycle lanes that I've struggled to find people to think is a good idea, Pat. That kind of adds to the frustration, I think.
Yeah, it does. What I don't want is any of them things getting in the way of me. And what I want is that bus, town bus, to keep as normal. Yeah. And when the councillor or whoever starts putting in these other things, that's not that's of somebody else's concern. But my concern is this bus.
And the bus drivers were good to you, weren't they? They were good to you, but also there was a wheelchair accessibility for people that required that.
Correct. The buses that I was on, and I know that some of my friends use that because of that wheelchair accessibility. And it's the other thing, Greg, is I lived in other cities, and those buses came on time and buses didn't come on time, and that's life. But from the eco-friendly type thing, I prefer that as well, that rather than having more cars on Main Street Letterkenny, that there is a bus going into Main Street Letterkenny with people. So that's the eco side of us that I would encourage people to sort of understand as well.
Okay.
Like, in terms of Greg, I don't know who's at the top table.
Well, leave it to us, Pat. We're gonna chase up and find out what the story is. I mean, I presume, and Caroline can confirm, that town bus was a private operation, was it? And they made a commercial decision not to. I'm just asking Caroline here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, okay. Well, we'll chase that up and find out more information, Pat, and try and find out who is responsible. We have tried them and we're waiting on a statement, and as soon as we get that, we'll chase it up further. Is that all right, Pat? So I need to get information, like if it's to be retendered, Caroline. Do you know what I mean? Is it going to be retendered? Is it going to be replaced? So I'll clarify all of that, Pat, off air, and bring the information to you and others.
But and finally, Greg, it's not if it's to be retendered and be due in November. It's to be retendered and that to be in this week. You know that's.
But those things can move quite quickly because we do have bus companies that
I
are. They have buses sitting there and they're ready to go. So if it does go out to tender, it goes out via a portal that all bus companies have access to. So we'll keep on top of that, Pat, and get you any information that we get. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great, Greg. Lovely thank story. You very much for this.
Pat, look after yourself. Oh, thanks brilliant. So much for that. I appreciate it. 086 60 25,000. As I say, I just want to get a little bit more information together for myself, and then I know I can follow it up. Reconfirmation. A caller says, is it true that there was no mention of the pledge at the confirmation in Lifford last weekend? I wasn't there, but a friend told me this. Well, sometimes it's done beforehand at a ceremony called the Ceremony of Light, so it's not always part of the confirmation that you might broadly attend. So I would be 100% confident that it was done as part of that Ceremony of Light, separate to the event your friend attended. Why during the Donegal match do they refer to Conor O'Donnell as the Inishowen man, yet there are six clubs in Inishowen? Why do they never say the Carn man, Mavill man, etc.? It's disheartening to us people here in Inishowen. I don't see what the issue is here, to be honest with you. If you could explain it a little bit more. Inishowen is just a collective area, and if you're from Carn, you're from Inishowen, aren't you? I would have thought that was relatively standard, but if I'm missing something about the complaint, please let me know. Greg, what would be wrong in getting to a league final or even winning it? Surely it would be better for Donegal to be playing a big game in Croke Park than to be playing an in-house gaming convoy. I can't figure out the GEA team's attitude to the league. It seems to be more of an annoyance than anything else. Surely a great team would want to win both the league and the championship. Yeah, I don't know what you're referencing there. I do know that I presume maybe you're talking about this conversation that he's had about securing Division 1 status and then maybe not focusing as much on winning the blooming thing, because often the final can be very close to the start of the championship, and that doesn't suit all clubs, all teams, I beg your pardon. So I think the desire not to win the league is more about the scheduling of the league leading into the championship than it is about the competition itself. But Brendan Devaney is going to be on with us a little later on. And we'll see if we can get some expert opinion on that. Now, Letterkenny Circuit Court on Tuesday heard how a man in his 20s forced a woman, also in her 20s, to take abortion pills at a location in Donegal on Valentine's Day in 2020. The man previously admitted he assaulted the victim and forced her to take tablets which caused the abortion of her 9-week-old unborn child. Senator Sarah O'Reilly of Aintu is now calling for an independent review of telemedicine abortion in light of the case. Thanks for joining me, Senator.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Okay, so what, maybe people won't understand the phraseology of the review that you're looking for. So what are your concerns in this matter, and what do you believe needs to be done or looked at?
Well, first of all, I'd like to just begin by expressing my deep sympathy for the woman involved at the centre of this Donegal case. What happened to her was simply... It wasn't just a private tragedy. It was an awful act of coercion and gender-based violence, particularly when a woman is at her most vulnerable. And it resulted in her losing her baby at a great amount of loss and heartbreak to her. And this woman was not unsupported, as some women can find themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. She was forced. And that distinction matters, because when somebody is compelled to take abortion medicine under pressure or threat, that's a crime. And it's a gender based crime, and it's punishable under law.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and so, like, we must commend her and thank her for her bravery, for coming forward with the courage of bringing this case. And I suppose in 2021, the Minister for Health concluded that telemedicine abortion was safe and effective from the clinical perspective. But the clinical safety alone is not the full picture, and we know that. And that's why I'm looking for a review that looks not only at the reported medical complications, but at the systems in place, if they're adequately in identifying and safeguarding women who may be under pressure, who may be monitored or controlled. When a consultation takes place remotely, it's very difficult for clinicians to see whether a woman is alone, whether there's somebody else in the room, whether in fact it's the abortion medication is for that woman herself. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know.
So you're saying the lack of, I mean, the abortion is what it is now in Ireland, following on that from that referendum. But because people can receive these pills by post, do you believe that should be scrapped because it takes away an opportunity even for a welfare check? You know, that maybe this person, if they had an opportunity to sit in front of someone, you know, could have articulated that this was not a decision that they wished to make.
That's exactly what I'm saying. This was only introduced in COVID, during COVID times, and it was only ever supposed to be temporary. And it was also introduced in England. And in England, there is evidence to back that there was a lot of coercive abortion happening. And clinically, it's always better to, as you say, come before the doctor and in a safe environment where you can speak freely. And it was reversed in England, but it wasn't reversed here. And that's why I'm calling for an urgent, fully independent review of telemedicine abortion provision.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there might be a bit of a pushback in relation to this, but there is just... this woman feels that her child has been taken from her, you know, and she might, I haven't spoken to her, but she might frame it as a murder or something along those lines. Her case is very important, but that's the one case we've heard of. We don't know how much of this actually goes on.
Well, that's the thing. Cases like this force us to ask difficult questions, the necessary questions, particularly how we identify and prevent coercion when abortion is provided through telemedicine. And it's also for the protection of women. If anything good can come out from a painful situation like this, it's awareness. And women need to know that pressure is not consent. Threats are not acceptable, and there is support available as well for women from Gardaí, from Women's Aid, from Safe Ireland. So we have a responsibility, I feel, to ensure that no woman feels she has to make a life-altering decision under fear.
And it's worth pointing out too that in one of the first cases of its kind in Ireland, the man was found guilty. He pled guilty to unlawfully ending the life of a fetus, which is contrary to legislation. So people should need to keep that in mind, that that in and of itself is a crime. He also pled guilty to a charge of assaulting the woman and causing her harm, contrary to Section 3 of the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act 1997. How do you progress this, Senator? I mean, obviously, you know, you've got TDs in the Dáil as well.
I just also like to add to that as well. You mentioned all, you know, the abuse, and he threatened to kick the baby out of her if she didn't take the abortion pills. But also the fact that he didn't admit liability until 5 years afterwards. So right before he was due to come before the court in November, he prolonged her pain. And he didn't come forward and plead guilty until last November, which also compounded the hurt and the pain that that lady has gone through. I think we need to examine screening process further. And I think that's common sense. And I don't think anybody can really, when we see the evidence coming before us. And we must remember in 2022, there was also a case of a girl under 18 in Ireland that was locked in a room and forced to take abortion tablets. So we know what's happening, and we just have to examine safeguarding measures to ensure women are protected. Mm. And we need to ensure that the women at risk are identified and supported as best as we can. And I don't think anybody can, you know, argue against that.
I think there are there might be counter arguments, but even beyond this case, the opportunity, good, proper healthcare, if that's what we're being told this is all about, would be that there is an in-person consultation, a conversation that can not just address issues like this, but many other issues as well. OK, we'll follow with interest, Senator. Thank you very much for your time. That is Senator Sarah O'Reilly of Aintu. If you've a view on that, let me know. 086 60 25000. That is our WhatsApp and our text number. You can give us a call too if that suits you better. 074 91 25000. Brendan Devaney, who is presenter of the DL Debates, just found a seat. Good morning to you.
Greg, I'm down at the RDS here. We have a trade show on. We're exhibiting. So, yeah. Wee bit of a panic there. I'll tell you the crack later, but here I am.
Right. Pádraig Kilfertaigh is going to be in the hot seat this evening. It's going to be a packed hour of football analysis and debate. Watching Donegal yesterday, watching the games, many of the games on Saturday, Donegal seemed so far ahead of other teams at this time of the, so early in the year.
Yeah, Greg, it's been an absolutely phenomenal start. I guess there was patches in Dublin and Kerry where we completely controlled the game, and we did let them back in there a bit. And Dublin new management kind of forming a new team, so we didn't maybe read too much on it. Kerry come up and be missing a lot of their main stars. But again, you know, we won the match. And you know, yesterday was more you know, this was a Mayo team on the up and up, two from two, and this was going to be a massive test, top of the table clash. People thought it would be very close. It was anything but. It was an absolutely brilliant performance from our guys right across the board. Some magnificent performances, as ever with Donegal. Everybody chimes in, and then there's some real stars on the day, no more than the returning starting Oisin Gallan was just unbelievable. And young McCahill in his debut, there were so many plus points from it, how he dominated the game and really made Mayo look very ordinary.
It's just a swagger, a control, a confidence. It's hard to, I can't think of the right words for it, but it just looks like a team full of confidence.
Yeah, I guess like there were so many questions after the All-Ireland final, just where we were at, what we're going to come new with next year, but we bit of give you doom and gloom about it. Like, the more I think about it, you know, all the brilliant football we played last year, we probably just met a team that was unbelievable on the day, and we didn't get anywhere near the pitch of it. It didn't mean that gap was there between us, but certainly how Jim and his team have hit the ground running on the kind of cup the way we've won them first three games. So you look at every other team, like they're up and down in terms of performances and what they're doing. Mayo is maybe the only one you thought was on the up and up. We dealt with them yesterday. So now after all the young lads that were played in the McKenna Cup and we thought, you know, they're for the future, they're going to be in the squad, we now can play them in these remaining fixtures in the league. So it would be brilliant for them to get that type of grounding, kind of laying the way on the team, and then they'll be more ready to play their part in the championship.
A bit of debate on the text machine this morning as to whether or not we're going to go for it. Is it a case of securing Division 1 status and then seeing how things go, or blooding players, or having an eye in the championship? You know, the usual stuff. Martin Morrissey was in the studio last week or the week before. He thinks Jim McGuinness wants to win the blooming thing. What's your view?
No, I disagree with you, Marty. Sorry. I think that, Greg, definitely it's a perfect time for us to blood the players. And when you look at it, my friend from England phoned me yesterday and he said, why didn't Donegal go for the league? Jack O'Connor wins a league statement, goes and wins a championship. I said, yeah, but Kerry are playing Clare in a Munster semi-final, you know, a Division 3 team. And then they've got Cork in the final. Like, Kerry's pathway, they need a game like that. We don't need it. And, you know, you can say what you want about the league. Like, that's a big game, a league final, Croke Park. Like, that's going to take a certain amount of energy and momentum to go into that. So I can't see what the plus points. I mean, there's one game in town, Greg. When you won back-to-back Ulsters, you're in a semi-final and final. There's only one game in town. Now, I know Jim will always concentrate on Ulster first. He sees that as the pathway, and that's fair enough. But on these Donegal players in that squad, there's only one thing they're after, and that's Sam Maguire. So for me, the league would only be getting in the way. So I would say very much blood the players. And in many ways, put it up to teams like Armagh next week with, you know, what you would call, you know, some of our newer players. And then you can always bring on the kind of...
Well, you see, the truth is, too, it's not like it's a crappy squad. You know, who is to say that a second string couldn't go on and win it? Do you know what I mean? Because I presume that confidence and that swagger and that organisation that's in the first teams that we've seen up until now, that's right throughout the squad. And you've got young guys chomping at the bit to be the next superstar.
Yeah. Well, if you think about the last year, we kind of took the foot off the gas. We were trying to avoid a league final because of the nature of where the Ulster Championship was. And then we almost beat Mayo in that day in Castle Bar. We hit the bar, missed a penalty, and really we could have snatched the game. So you were looking at going, do we want to win this? Do we not? It's a very strange mindset, Greg, to go out not to win a match. Now, Jim says, let's just say Armagh next week, and he has maybe six or seven changes. Those players aren't the one that match. Mm. And I think in many ways there's a lot of talent there and you could still go and win it. But that would send a message out to the rest of the country. It's a great place for us to be in terms of you can't lose.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way Donegal treat their
It's not that you actively try and lose a game. You just don't actively put out your very strongest starting 15 and subs to win it. As I say, we have Páraic Hilfoighty in the hot seat tonight. Brendan Kilcoyne, sports editor with the Donegal News, Brian Ferry, former Mayo star John Casey, and Gaelic Life's top sports writer Michael McMullen there. It'll be interesting to see where Mayo think they are now. You were talking of them being an open-up team, and, you know, like, our approach to the league and their approach to the league might be somewhere different, and they've got this thing hanging over their heads, you know, which it's a bit of a joke, but I'm sure they can't ignore. That'll dent their sales. It'll be interesting to hear a Mayo perspective on that game yesterday.
Yeah, John Casey, a great lad. He does a lot of punditry there. It's great for him to come on. And yeah, listen, you could see the paw prints of Paddy Talley, their coach, all over that, you know, in terms of how they were set up. And It's as if they got one part of their game not bad in terms of going man for man and committing to the tackle, but they didn't have a lot else along with it. You know, Donegal really controlled possession and controlled the match. Now, there was a couple of goal chances at the start of the second half, Greg. Might have made that a bit different. Mayo did come out with a bit between the teeth. They unloaded the bench. But we weathered that. A couple of great saves from Marini and the goal. He's having a fantastic season. So we kind of weathered that storm. So, yeah, a lot of question marks around Mayo, Greg. And sometimes when you look at it, you know, for Donegal fans, you know, like it's such a great time to be supporting the team and following them because they're playing some fantastic football. And some of the scores and the runs made yesterday, you know, from the likes of Conor Donald, Ryan McHugh's two-pointer, like Murphy coming back on the pitch. I mean, just seeing Michael come on. You're just living in a special time when you're watching Michael Murphy enter the fray. You know?
All right, well, enjoy your time in Dublin. I know there's much more to be discussed tonight. People can tune in just after 7. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us. It wasn't just actually football yesterday. It was interesting on the soccer pitch as well. Rangers and Celtic. Rangers, a great comeback victory to keep the pressure on Hearts in the Scots Prem. Squeaky bum time if you're a Celtic fan watching their performance, but they won too, and that's the most interesting SPL I've seen in a long time. But it's a three horse race, a genuine three horse race now. So I'm sure many of you soccer fans following the Scottish game had an interesting up and down day yesterday.
The Talk of the Northwest, the Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, let us go to the issue of changes in rules which will impact on Airbnbs. Brian Gilfeather is owner of a house which he occasionally rents on Airbnb. And it's ahead of a meeting, I should say, on Tuesday, the 17th of February at the Mount Argyle Hotel at 7 p.m. But we'll come back to that and remind you of the meeting. We just want to get to the nub of the issue here. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Right. What are these proposed changes and how might it affect people?
Well, it's a big subject, Greg. But first of all, I wanted to start off by saying I'm delighted to hear that the government is upgrading the derelict housing scheme. Yeah. I've seen with my own eyes how, you know, builders and other people are trying to put some housing back into the housing stock. I first rented a house in Donegal. Well, my mum and dad did. In 1966 in Port Salon, the Carruth family owned it, and we've been having holiday families in Donegal for a very long time. The issues changing around renting in Donegal short term are ones that are threatening micro businesses, people like myself and many pensioners, because 50% of the people who rent out their houses in Donegal are over the age of 50, and the vast majority are actually women. So people who are legal, have been doing things for a long time to help a small passive income, which also greatly supports Donegal tourism, are under a little bit of threat because the government are trying to find ways to increase the housing stock. And we totally understand that there's a housing crisis. We totally understand that there's an affordability issue. And there is in many Western countries. Ireland isn't alone in that. But we're legitimate small businesses, and the threat of the requirement to change planning in particular is a real threat to our business, and I'd like to explain why. So somebody like myself, who is a principal residence in Ireland that I use myself, but I move out into a caravan during the summer and I rent my house out. It helps pay for the house. It gives me a small passive income. I pay tax on it, and I'm like one of thousands of people in the Wild Atlantic Way, and specifically in Donegal, who do things like that. But some changes include registration with Fáilte Ireland, which we totally support. I like the idea of it being regulated and the standard for holidaymakers is good. But also then there's a requirement perhaps to be enforced to change our planning status so that we can continue our legitimate small businesses.
And just one question in relation to that.
Sure.
Is that that really, though, is it not, is a mechanism to reduce the amount of Airbnbs, isn't it? I mean, it's not like everyone who might comply will get the change of use or whatever it might be. Is that not really a mechanism to sort of say, right, well, actually, you can't do this anymore? Is that what the sense is out there?
Well, I think that there is a sense of that out there, Greg, but if I narrow this down to just being a citizen and specifically being a person operating in Donegal, I think that the impact in terms of it being an attempt to close down tourism in Donegal isn't what the plan is, but unfortunately the result may be similar, because if we all need to apply for planning permission to short-term rent, there's a proposal from the council to make that change cost up to €20,000. I worked that out recently with the profit that I make personally in my house. Although this is not about me, I just happen to be representing maybe a lot of people in my situation. €20,000 would wipe out. I just wouldn't rent my house out anymore. I would just use it myself, and I'd probably get rid of my caravan. I'm sure people might say, poor you. Mm. It isn't about me.
Would you not fall under
the passive income.
I get you. Would you not fall, though, under the category of home sharing?
This isn't about me, Greg.
I understand that. You're talking about selling your caravan, but the truth be told, not that there's any... There's not smoke and mirrors here, but the truth be told, this wouldn't actually apply to you, because you would really effectively be sharing your principal private residence, so you would be exempt from these rules.
As far as I know, Greg, but the amount of mystery and smoke around it, if you were able to guarantee that to me, Greg, I'd be happy and
It's in the legislation, and you're sharing your principal private residence. You would register with... Yeah. Fulch Ireland, you would be exempt from the very rules that we're talking of. But as you say, this isn't just about you. Yours is actually really quite a unique situation, I think.
Well, I think mine's relatively simple. I'm really talking here about the thousands of people who bring people to Donegal to stay in converted garages, in houses where they have perhaps a second home. They're lucky enough to have a second home, and that this... legal way of helping pay for that home, but also producing a passive income. Largely, Greg, we're talking about elderly people. I'm a pensioner. Mm. The vast majority of people who come to our meetings are pensioners. These are small incomes. I could quote one of our colleagues who gave up work because of having a disabled child, converted their double garage into a accommodation. And get a passive income from that, which helps them look after their child at home. She's been in contact with me and terribly concerned that any changes could impact that. But I'd also like to go on, Greg, and talk about the impact it's having on tourism at the minute, because as members, because there's this May 20th deadline, all of us are having bookings getting cancelled. From people from in the States and also domestically, worried that their holiday will be cancelled because of all this confusion and change. So that's money coming out of the Donegal economy. You know, when people come up to me near Fulcara, I'm sending them to Lizzie's Diner, the Strand Road Restaurant, the Cove Arnold's, Muck and Muffins, all these businesses, the bars, the workhouse, all these businesses that rely on tourism. If you create in a fragile coastal rural economy any form of concern as to whether people can have their holiday or not, people just will vote with their feet and go somewhere else. How would you feel if you were going to go to Donegal, Greg, with your family, but you knew there was a possibility that, in fact, the holiday might have to be cancelled? Yeah. You'd probably do something more.
And just before I bring another guest into this, what is the actual concern of a planning application here? I kind of indicated that could it be used as some way of reducing the amount of these properties. But from your perspective... registering with Fulch Ireland, that makes sense. Okay, that's understandable.
It does, yeah.
What is the opposition to then having to get a change of use of planning permission?
Okay, well, there's a consultation out that concluded in the middle of January for Donegal County Council. Their proposal was that if you wanted to go through the changing your planning permission for your house, so say, for example, you want to rent for more than 90 days or it isn't your principal residence. Well, at the minute, you may be faced with a €20,000 bill for that. Mm-hmm. Greg, that's a bit like saying you've got a nice, Ford Cougar, but from May, you're going to have to pay an extra £20,000 to keep it legal on the road. I mean, you would just it's staggeringly disproportionate given that you've been driving that Kuga since 1960. That's the sort of point that I'm making.
Let me bring Philip McFadden into the conversation as well. Philip, thank you for holding there. What's your view on this?
Yeah, I concur with Brian. We're the most northerly B&B in Ireland, and we have two B&B rooms, and the other room we sleep in, so it's a three-bedroom house. And I phoned up Fudge Ireland, and I said, you know, what's the story with the short-term letting? And she says, oh, you have to apply, for the register. And I says, what about the planning permission change of use? She says, oh, no, that's nothing to do with us. Mm. That's Donegal County
but
Council,
again,
which,
you
it, which
would
it
fall,
is.
Would you not fall into the category of home sharing if a principal resident remains exempt from the rules?
Well, again, Greg, why aren't Fáilte Ireland on this programme alleviating my fears?
You pay them. I mean, you pay these guys, don't you? Full charge.
We're booking.com. We get most of our business from... Well, it's actually my wife that runs the business.
No, I
help out
yeah.
as... I help as much as I can, and it's a lot of hard work. You know, people think, oh, B&B, and we've built up this business over the last 5 years, and you can look at our reviews. People are quite happy. They come to Malin Head, the most northerly point in Ireland, and we give them a very good stay. We try our best.
I have no doubt
in
that, but I think it's a serious issue of communication here, because February, March, April, May, we're 3 months out, and people still aren't actually sure.
Well, that's what I said to the lady on board, to the customer service. I says, do you know we have a housing crisis in Donegal? And she says, there's a housing crisis all over Ireland. I says, have you ever heard of defective blocks? And she says, no. I says, you expect us to go to the Donegal County Council, who are overwhelmed with planning due to the defective blocks, and overwhelm them again. It's like they're trying to shut down.
I understand where you're coming from. That's an interesting angle, though, Philip, because I would imagine part of this is about freeing up houses for people affected by defective blocks. So we're discussing changes to the short-term letting space, and we've been speaking to Brian and Philip, and I'll bring them back into the conversation. But Councillor Michael McClafferty is with me as well. Michael, you say you've been on top of this issue. So I'll just ask the first question, which I'm curious about. If I short-term lease part of my house, a bedroom in my house, will I have to seek planning permission for that?
Yeah, Greg, this is the situation. Any change of use to your house, you have to seek planning permission for it. I've been asking about this last week itself as of late. I've been checking this out and rechecking it. And the bottom line is, any change of use, you have to seek planning. Now, there's a problem here as well, the change of use end of it. Some of the houses, as I explained to Caroline, many of the houses, for all I know, but at least some anyway, in my own area, unfortunately, they're along the M56. This may or may not cause a problem, because once they put in for planning change of use, even though they have an existing house at the minute, Greg, they're effectively putting in a new planning application as such. And as I was told last week by a chief planner, every planning will be looked at on its own merits as such. So unfortunately, there's no guarantee the change of use will work because you're long end.
So just to be very clear, because I want to make sure that I'm only putting out fully factual information here. Under the legislation proposals I've seen in terms of planning and usage rules, home sharing of a principal residence remains exempt from the strict new rules, but other properties must comply. So that suggests to me, if I move out of my house and rent it, or if I rent a room or an upstairs of the house, I wouldn't have to seek planning permission. But you're telling me that you've been told by Donegal planners that I would need to, I would need a change of use application.
Yes, that is my clear understanding, Greg. I stand to be corrected in that, but that's my clear understanding.
I thought you were told it, Michael. You were told that, though, yeah?
I was,
I was told it. Yes, Greg, okay, I was told it. But you're going to have a different argument there. That's what I've been told from the chief planners in Lifford.
Brilliant. No, I'm not having a go, Michael. I'm just, I just want to make sure that's what they said to you.
Yes, but it's just important as well to be clear on what I'm saying as well, what I was told. That this is the stance, like any change of use has to be put in for planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if it's only one room in the property.
Correct.
Okay, that's quite significant, isn't it, Brian, if that is the case? Because that's sort of at odds to the national guidance, it would seem.
Okay, well, the first thing I want to say, Greg, is I know Michael, and he is an amazing advocate for his area. So I would listen carefully to Michael's concerns, and I know Michael has concerns about the N56, as we all do. You mentioned communication. Funny enough, there was an advert for bingo there, and I was thinking the numbers we want to come up in bingo is how many euros are Donegal going to lose with this new legislation? How many guests are we going to lose? You know, we're all hoping for a full house, but we hope it's the right sort of full house. We've invited people from... So for our meeting tomorrow night, I just want to plug that, which is in the Mount Errigal Hotel at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. We've rented a room, hope it's big enough. We invited people from the council, from the planning department. They said they didn't want to come because there was a new planning statement coming out, so there's no point them coming. We invited the tourism office from Donegal County Council to come and listen to us, but there was nobody available. And we invited the local Fáilte Ireland people in Donegal to come to our meeting, but nobody was available. Mm-hmm. When it comes to communication, and you can hear the worry. I mean, you know, if you think I'm worried, I'm not worried about me. I'll survive. This isn't my principal income. It's a passive top-up income, but it's helpful. But when you hear the concerns being aired on the program by others as well, you know, you can see that people are concerned about this, and communication working.
Yeah,
there should be. Is it not really disappointing? And I don't know if there's any councillors coming to the meeting either. Yeah. They've all been invited, and we haven't had a deluge of people saying they'll come and listen.
Okay. Well, I mean, what we can do, and it's part of our role, I would say, is get someone on from planning. If they'd be available from the council. Michael, can I come back to you just for a moment? Are you for or against these proposals?
And what sense, Greg?
These new rules that seek planning permission for short-term lets. Are you in favour of them or against them? Or
I'm against them, Greg, especially because I think it's taking a rock hammer to break a nut, to be quite honest with you. Mm. At the end of the day, people are only trying to make a living and so on. Look, we're all trying to do the same. I don't like the idea the way it's going to be. Anybody's trying to make that living, first of all, they have a huge expense to pay. Secondly, then there's no guarantee they'll get on to the N56. So I'm not in favour of it.
And just in relation to that, obviously, Michael, you'd be inundated by people who have nowhere to live in and around the Dunfanaghy-Fallcarragh area. It doesn't really necessarily apply to our two guests, Brian and Philip, but... You know, there's a lot of houses in a lot of parts of this county that are occupied for 2 or 3 months of the year. I presume this is part of what the government's trying to do to get those properties into active use to service the housing shortage. So you're not in favour of that?
I'm in favour, Greg, surely. Of course, I am, Greg, of helping people get in houses. But to be quite honest with you, my opinion on it is, the people that are maybe renting their houses, as you suggest, for 2 or 3 months of the year, I don't think it's going to make any difference to them, because if they wanted to rent them long term, they'd be renting them long term by now at the minute. They wouldn't need to be jammed in the corners to rent it. Unfortunately, as well, this conversation comes up many times.
But what it would mean is that these houses that are in complete darkness all winter, the owners of them might start renting them out long term, or put them on the market for long term rental use. You know the houses I'm on about. They're in complete darkness all year round. Not people, a cottage industry whereby you rent part of your house or what have you. I'm on about the masses, the 8,000 or 9,000 holiday homes around the county that are just short term rents. Would you not like to see them coming back into everyday use for the community?
Greg, of course, we'd like to see them coming back into everyday use where possible and where applicable. But what I'm saying is, I think a lot of these people will either they will either end up selling the house possibly or just stick to their guns and stop Airbnb, and the house will be left empty regardless. I think other approaches need to be. I think it might be more helpful, the government be more helpful taking the approach to trying to contact these people directly to see what the story is. Say, look, you know, the loaf and the sense is one thing another. Look, Paddy or Mary or Greg or Michael, you have an empty house there. It doesn't seem to be in use. What's the story on it? That'll be a more helpful thing, I think, than what's going on at the moment.
I'm not being smart, but that's literally what this is all about. This, the register with Fulch Ireland and having to seek planning permission, it's quite literally what you've just said. It finds out what the houses are being used for, and then the council can make a decision as to whether that's a fitting use of them.
Greg, I just wanted to come in here.
Okay, just make your last point if you haven't already, Michael, or do you need to go right now?
I need to go here.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
But Greg, just for a go, what respect, there's many, many houses out there not being Airbnb'd and so on that don't fall into any category, to be fair. Like, I get what you're saying. Mm. Okay, I know you're not being smart, and I get what you're saying. That's going to affect a certain amount, but it's not going to affect them all. There's plenty of houses and darks everywhere that I can guarantee are up in Airbnb, Greg, and that's the bigger problem as well.
No problem.
I think it's taking a rock hammer to break a nut, to be quite honest, which is the way things are going.
Right, okay. That's your view. Thank you for that. Was it Brian that wanted to come back in there? Or Philip?
If you don't mind, Greg.
No, go on, go ahead,
Brian. If you don't mind, I'd like to go back in. I do worry when it's used, themes like dark houses during the winter.
Yeah.
Like, this is a new problem, and vilifying people like myself who've made a decision to help get some passive income from a house island, but also it's not illegal to own a holiday home. So to describe it as darkened during the year and to be the problem is, I think, I think it's just unfair.
There is a, I understand where you're coming from.
I know
from.
People who are having sleepless nights about that subject.
I also know people that are homeless or very close to being homeless, and this is about trying, whether it's right or not, this is about trying to address some of that. Brian, we have historically, for many, many years, through no fault of the people who built these houses, we've had a planning policy whereby people can't even build on their own property, but these houses are popping up all over the place, and particularly in tourist areas. Schools have closed, post offices have closed, Garda stations have been removed because the majority of properties in those areas are holiday homes. That's not a blame of the holiday home owner. That's historical planning is an issue. But in many areas of this county, the life and soul, 365 days of the year, of communities has been lost. It's not down to an individual blame. If someone works hard or whatever, or happens to become a landlord or has the luxury of a holiday home, fantastic. But I'm talking about the planning structure and decisions that led us to a situation whereby many parts of this county are actual seasonal. Yet 50 years ago, they had two or three shops, three pubs, post office and two national schools. So do you understand where you're coming from? I'm looking at on the big picture here. I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad for having a bit of luxury.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And I start off by saying that I appreciate that there's a housing crisis. There is globally. I don't want to get into a sort of ping pong with you, but the closure of post offices and Garda stations is a bit of a stretch to say that that's as a result of holiday homes. If you look at social housing in Ireland, you know, the same number of houses are being built by the government in the 2020s as there was in 1975. The population's gone from 3 million to 5 million. Please tell me why that's a problem because people have a holiday home.
Yeah, it's not,
you know,
of course.
So if you open it up to a wider debate, I do feel that you can't blame...
And I've said on this programme as well, I've said it on this programme as well too, you know, it's a bit of an... When government starts getting involved in people's private property, it is potentially a pathway to something far more severe. We had proposals from the Social Democrats whereby houses could be taken off people that didn't pass through the door. So I am very sympathetic to that. But Brian, also on this program, we do try and tease out all sides of the arguments. And you're here to,
of course,
you're here to dispute the way I framed it. And I fully understand where you're coming from. All of this will be teased out extensively in a meeting tomorrow night at the Mount Errigal Hotel, Letterkenny, at 7 p.m. Having a holiday home, having a second property, being a landlord, these shouldn't be dirty words, and people shouldn't be judged or fingered because of it. A lot of it's accidental, or a lot of it's due to hard work as well. And I respect that, Brian, but I'm just trying to tease out all elements of the argument.
Greg,
I totally understand.
A last word on
yes,
our
Philip,
situation.
Please.
Well, I'm looking out the window now, and I'm looking at Bambus Crown. We are the most northerly B&B in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And if you had told me 6 years ago there was tourists would come to Malinhead 12 months of the year, I would have said, you're lying.
Yeah.
But I was totally wrong. We have people come, it slows down. And you know, and the winter months, but there's still people come. People come for the northern lights, the dark skies. They come for many, many reasons. They, you know, the quietness of the place. So we have two rooms in our house that we rent out through booking.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, how, like, 20,000 if the other guest is right. If the planning permission is 20,000, we haven't got 20,000 to spend.
Well, I'm going to get.
So
we will stop.
We will stop B&B. So we people come here, you know, to experience.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like Fáilte Ireland aren't going to come out of this smelling of roses.
Well,
Fáilte Ireland should be represented.
What's very important, I think, is that you know exactly how this might affect you. And Brian as well, and others. Lots of people are in different situations. So we will endeavour to get a planner on or someone from the council,
yes,
get some of this stuff
clarified.
Please
get Fáilte Ireland and the council on to explain it. Me and Brian could be totally jumping the gun, and it might be just a tick box.
No harm to Fáilte Ireland, but I think they're bit ball players in this, and I think really this comes down to legislation, planning and enforcement of same. We can inquire to Fáilte Ireland, but I mean, look, they're there with keeping up a register, as far as I can see.
Fáilte Ireland aren't, but players, like, they came here to Malinhead or Tenishon 7 years ago, and they promised us a load of glass boxes, and they promised us 3.6 million, I think, was the visitor centre in Malinhead, and that was 7 years ago, and they haven't been seen since.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Philip McFadden, Brian Kilfedder. Just to remind you, that meeting tomorrow night at the Mount Errigal Hotel, Letterkenny, at 7 p.m. Nevin Maguire, chef, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How are you today? Are you well?
Good to have you back on the show. How's life?
All good, my friend.
Okay, we're going to have you back up in Donegal very shortly. Barry Quinn, owner of Port New Market Garden. Are you there, Barry?
I am. Good morning.
Good to see you. How's life with you?
Going good, yeah. Busy as usual, but all's well.
Okay, talk to me about this special fundraising cookery demonstration hosted by our other guest, Nevin Maguire, coming up shortly. They start the next month, effectively.
We had the fundraiser before Christmas. We talked to you before about it, Greg. We managed to raise €54,000. Nevin got in contact with us shortly after the fundraiser was launched to offer his time to do this cooking demonstration. And it's an incredible from Nevin to give us time, because we're going to be able to add a substantial amount of money to this fund. It's on the 9th of March. In the Clannery Hotel at 6:30 p.m. The doors are opening, and it's going to be a lovely evening. We've got food producers that are going to be showcasing their goods, and there's going to be a raffle, and there's going to be an auction, and it's going to be a really nice evening of food and connection and fundraising.
Nevin, why were you so moved to make this? I mean, God knows you don't have a ton of time, right? So for you to want to get involved in this, obviously it was important to you.
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of Barry's, and I think the good work he does in the community and wider afield, he's an inspiration. And him and my brother, so my brother Kenneth, you might have met him and spoke to him before, Greg, he sets up the kitchens, and he asked me, would I do this? And I said, Kenny, let's get a date that works for everyone. We'll do this. Let's make as much money for a fantastic charity, and let's have a great night. And that's what it's all about. So they picked the date. Well, I picked the date between the three of us. They picked the venue, the time and the place. And Greg, we'll have a great night. So we will.
You're such a diva. You pick the date and we all have to roll in behind you. Come here.
Maybe that came across wrong. I'm sorry. I didn't mean
it. It did not. I'm being mischievous. So talk to me, Nevin, about one of these nights, what people can expect, because it's a rare treat to get it up close to home as well. But they're informative and they're fun, and this is for a fantastic cause as well. So what can people look forward to on the 9th of March in the Clanree?
Yeah. So as Barry said, that there'll be lots of lovely food stands there showcasing, you know, their produce and wares and that. And that's where it all begins. They'll come in, the guests. I'm going to cook 5 different recipes. So we'll do probably 4 savoury recipes in the first half. Then we do a raffle, and there's loads of raffle prizes. And Barry doesn't need this, but I'm going to donate a dinner overnight accommodation for 2 people as part of the prizes, because he's put a huge amount of work and effort into it. We want to make as much money on the night. So it's informative, it's fun. People will go home probably hungry, but they'll go home with in inspiration, and they'll have a lovely feel-good factor. And at the end of the day, it's for such a good cause. As I say, my brother Kenny sets up the kitchens. I'll bring my chef. We bring all the food. And then 2 lucky people, Greg, will come up and they'll eat my food and drink the wine, and hopefully enjoy the whole evening. So I love doing these. And for me, this is a local one for me. Letterkenny, Donegal, it doesn't get better than that. So just the people are brilliant. And actually, I had people in the restaurant Friday night and Saturday night talking about it. So I know Barry and the team, you know, we're trying to get as many people there as possible. We're trying to make as much as possible. I think it's going to be a great night, Greg.
Well, I know tickets are already selling very fast. And if you want to go, I would get it on. I would get on it straight away. Go to portnewmarketgarden.ie, because this will sell out. If you want to be there, get on the website now, because that's the only way you can guarantee that you will be there. And also, I love the idea of food producer stands there as well, showcasing the local and artisan producers. And you know, without prompting, Nevin, you're always very quick to push that, because we do it so well here. We have amazing natural produce, whether it's the land or the sea and everything in between.
Absolutely, you have some of the best produce. And I mean, like, you look back at all the different food festivals that we've done over the years and tasted Donegal, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, they set the benchmark for every other food festival, in my opinion. And I just think Donegal, it's the people too, and it's the produce. And you're right, you know, I'll be doing a lovely kind of like a nice fillet of hake. We get that from Killybegs. You know, we'll be doing a nice little kind of a red pepper dressing. Going to do a warm steak salad. Probably one of the most asked questions I ever get, Greg, is how to cook the perfect steak. Show me how to chop an onion on pots, pans and knives. It never changes. Yeah. So the recipes I'll be doing, everyone will go home with a lovely little free recipe booklet from that we get printed from ourselves, and we'll do 4 savoury recipes. Another recipe that I'll be doing is kind of like a chicken and rice bake with chorizo using chicken thighs. So we want it affordable for people. It's not fine dining food. It's real wholesome, delicious food using the very best of ingredients. And with Barry there, he's going to be doing the MC. You know, we'll have great fun, so we will. And that's what it's want. That's what it's about, inspiring people and just cooking some lovely, simple, easy, delicious recipes.
Barry, something happened, didn't it, just before Christmas, whereby, you know, you spotted something, you did something, and next thing you know, €55,000 has been drawn together for local families experiencing hardship, and now it's run into 2026 with Nevin and his brother getting so involved in it. Two things it points to for me. A, there's a serious problem in this country with people in hardship, more so, I think, than we're aware of. But B, those who have are always on hand to say, right, if I can help my fellow person, I will. And we do that again in Donegal better than anywhere else. So something happened, Barney, didn't it? Really quite special as part of this Christmas appeal. And it's great to see it running into a new year.
Yeah, it was incredibly sad to hear the stories of my own local community. And of course, as you say, Greg, it's across the country. There's something really wrong structurally. I'm not a politician. I'm not an economist. I'm a vegetable grower. I'm a father. I care about my community. And I've used my social media platform to try and help those people in my community. And it's just snowballed into something that hopefully we can go from strength to strength with, keep adding to this fund, reach a wider community if possible. And yeah, I'm really thankful to everybody that's donated, everybody that's gone on board. Again, Nevin and Kenny for putting their time forward to add to this fund. And we've got a lot of sponsors on board, and we've got a lot of prizes. But yeah, it was a bit of a roller coaster there before Christmas, emotionally for myself and with all the staff at the Downstrands Family Resource Centre. You know, I went in there not knowing what was going on, really. You had an idea, but not hearing the actual stories. It was really saddening. So I tried my best, and thankfully it just really took off, and we've been helping a lot of people. We have over, I think it's 57 households helped. A lot of them was just, they needed heating oil, for God's sakes, they're in a cold house. A lot of them didn't have food for Christmas. We even got someone a Christmas tree, which was, you know, oh my God, they've killed kids, you know, they were struggling. And one after another, we heard the stories, confidentially, of course, and you know, we've been able to help a lot of people, and it's really fantastic.
It truly is. You can confirm tickets are selling very, very quickly, Barry, and people need to get on to portnewmarketgarden.ie to ensure they can get along to this event.
Yep, that's, there's a link there, and you can get your tickets. They're selling quite fast. There is a few left, but yeah, you know yourself, as you say, Greg, this is going to sell out. I was at the Donegal game yesterday, and I met a lot of people saying, I must get my tickets. So
yes,
yeah,
but we need to turn those words into action, or else we're yeah. going to be disappointed. That's it. Yeah. I love the idea. People look down their nose a bit at chicken thighs, Nevin and other cuts. But, you know, you can make some wonderful food, as you quite literally will demonstrate on the 9th of March in the Clanrea.
Ah, yeah, they're fantastic. They're fantastic value and flavour. And we're going to be using Noon's Poultry, which are based up on near Clonmany and Donegal in a show. And absolutely fantastic. Good value, full of flavour. We're going to do a lovely kind of one pot dish that will feed a family, you know. And you're talking about €4 or €5 will feed a family of four. You know, so that kind of things we're kind of thinking of. Now, there will be a lovely dessert. I'm going to do a cheesecake too at the end of it.
Oh, stop. And
oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know. It's going to be a really
just
nice
plug it into my veins. That's all I want you to do.
A lemon curd cheesecake.
Oh, you know, no, that's even better.
I know, it's so delicious. But listening to Barry, like, he's an inspiration. And I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, when people have hope, you know, and what he's doing for the community, it's all about, you know, getting out there, just supporting one another. And I think no one does it better than himself. So I really am looking forward to it, Greg, and I'm privileged to be asked. Thank you.
Well done, Nevin. Thank you so very much indeed. We look forward to seeing you. That's celebrity chef, if he doesn't mind me calling him that, Nevin Maguire, who will be on stage from 8 p.m. on March the 9th from the Clanrea, with all proceeds going directly to the Downstrands Family Resource Centre, who have the wherewithal to reach the community. But this is off the back of an initiative from Barry Quinn at the Port New Market Garden, and that Christmas appeal. And it was a perfect partnership. €55,000 raised already. And to hear Nevin donating Barry just live there, an overnight stay and meal at his... the demand on his premises is through the roof. That's fantastic. So you're going to, I'm sure you're not setting a target, but it's going to be a great night, no doubt.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. That's so generous of Nevin to even give that as well as his time. We as I say, we have got some lovely prizes. We've got them auction prizes. We might even auction off that one. We've got some fantastic sponsors. I'd like to mention the Ardra Distillery, iMotors, Nancy's in Ardra, and McCafferty's Bars have all chipped in with substantial amounts of money to really kick things off. And we have set a bit of a target, and we're hoping to have another €25,000 put into this pot to continue on.
As host, compare, are you going tuxedo, shirt,
what do you
jacket?
Think I should wear?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Go the whole hog.
The tux might be a bit much.
Whatever fits your personality, that's what you do. Thanks so very much indeed, Barry. Look after yourself and well done.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us on.
Bye-bye. That's Barry Quinn, owner of Port New Market Garden. And just before that, we heard from Nevin Maguire. Lots of you messaging in on the Airbnb issue. People worked all of their lives to invest in a second house. Now they're being punished for it. I'm very sympathetic to that point of view. It applies to students too attending the Gaeltacht. Tourism is important to Donegal. 20,000 jobs. Why doesn't the state build social housing? Another, what a lot of complaining about Airbnb's new rules. You built it to make money. How much have you made before this new law comes in? You can't have it both ways. And last for now, the definition of home sharing is a very grey area, as is the definition of an active farmer. And on it goes. That is an issue, of course, we'll be returning to just to get clarity as well as to get to the comments that we didn't get to so far. But that's where we leave it on the show today. Thank you so very much for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.